is the Unapologetic Podcast with Tiana Dolikov, covering the topics others are too afraid to talk about.
Welcome to the Unapologetic Podcast. I'm your host, Tiana Dolikov. You can find me on Twitter at Tiana Dolikov. That's at TianaDalikov. You can also find me on Facebook. Just search my name. Or you can find me on Gab at gab.ai/Tiana_Dolikov. Today on the podcast, for all of you listening in, you guys are getting quite a treat today. I have with me a friend of mine named Brian Hendricks. He's the author of the book, The Genetic Roots of Culture, How Culture Results from Genetic Behaviors.
Hello. I guess you know my name already, and I wrote a book. it was exciting to write. I wish I could sell more copies of it, so maybe this will help.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about your background. How did you get into writing this book?
Well, this book has been something I've wanted to write since the misdefinition of behavioral modernity. However the hell you say it, but the common hypothesis in evolutionary biology says that this trait, these are a series of traits that swept through as phenotypic changes in different populations per race and ethnicity: Mongoloid, Australoid, Negroid, Caucasoid. And I disagreed with that in my thesis that I wrote, and said no, it actually only affected people in northern climates, Mongoloids and Caucasoids, and it didn't have any effect on Negroids or Australoids. And this was very controversial even back in 2005, before we had a big sweeping PC culture. And I've always said, I just want to write about how people misidentify what culture is. So many people think culture is aesthetic, you know, food, the type of clothes you wear, the type of music that you listen to. These things are culture. These things are topical trends. Culture is more foundational. Culture is your drive for scientific advancement. And how do you have ground ponds with Ebola, or do you have aqueducts with clean flowing water? These things are cultures. Do you build huts or cathedrals? And I just always wanted to put a voice out there to that, because the PC take dominates popular culture, and you get a watered down definition of what culture is. And nobody's teaching you the real these days. And I wanted to change that.
Awesome. So, guys, again, the book is called The Genetic Roots of Culture, How Culture Results from Genetic Behaviors. I am currently reading the book. I'm almost done with it. It's a fantastic read so far. So I'm going to ask Brian some questions about some of the things that he mentions in the book to hopefully give you guys a bit of insight into what the book is actually about and what he discusses inside. Some good stuff up ahead for you guys. So, Brian, my first question. Are you ready?
I think so.
All right, here we go. In the introduction to The Genetic Roots of Culture, you liken those who believe culture is not genetic with flat earthers, as we call them. It's a well-recognized analogy. Everybody can pretty much identify what a flat earther is. But is the only reason you chose that analogy because it's so well-known, or are there other parallels that you saw that drove you to make that analogy?
Well, I could be a nice guy and say I said it because it's well known and everybody would get it, but I wanted to be a jerk. I wanted to let people know that if you don't recognize something that's so axiomatically true and in your face, there's something wrong with you. For the longest time, Newton and his Newtonian laws of motion and his theory of gravity, he couldn't really mathematically quantify it. You know, gravity was just assumed to be a force. And now we can measure it. Now we know what G is. But for the longest time, it was just assumed that it was true, because if you dropped something, it fell. You know, the planet stayed in orbit, in motion, and we could tell these things were true. And it's the same thing, I believe, here through culture. You can tell from the empirical observable evidence by looking at every single area on the planet, past and present, right now, today. You can look and see that cultures are fundamentally, necessarily different, and they all tie back to the population's genetics. They're built upon behaviors. That's the only thing culture can be built upon, is the behaviors of its populations.
That's interesting. That actually brings me into the next question, because in the first chapter, you talk about Tom and Tim, right? The story of these two different men who grow up in two different cultures, or they have two different cultures depending on where they ended up living. Yeah. Can you kind of walk us through that parable? Like, tell us the story of Tom and Tim and tell us the implications here with the differences between their cultures.
Yeah, sure. I think I might have forgot which was which. I think Tom was the more of the African culture is what I was driving at.
Yeah, I think he is. Yeah.
But the thing that I wanted people to realize there is just Tom and Tim's were the name I was given. And by the time I'm through explaining it, we're talking about 100 or 200 generations in the future. So these are just Tim's people genetically. They're not actually still living in the culture. And it just talks about, if you were alive 200,000 years ago when modern man first broke off from our last common ancestor and we were bipedal apes, we were pretty much modern humans, give or take a few phenotypic changes along the way. How would you plot your life if you were in a desert and you had to chase food and chase water? Your children didn't live very long at all. You were always on the go to survive. How would you plot life versus how would Tim plot life when he's stuck in a cave because of the ice age and they can't move anywhere? So, you know, one tribe, one population would necessarily have to adopt the hunter-gatherer culture to where they're hunting their food and they're gathering their food. And the other would be sedentary people who would necessarily, if they wanted the best odds for survival, have to start breeding animals, and they would have to start building more complex structures to keep them safe because they weren't moving around. They were pretty much locked in place. It's geologic time here, not just, you know, a little time you can watch on the clock. We're talking tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of years, but the way evolution works through more advantageous traits being more likely to be passed on as a phenotype, behaviors are a phenotype, and there's an entire branch of science dedicated to this called behavioral genetics. And those behaviors that make someone a hunter-gatherer or an agrarian is the opposite of that, the agrarian sedentary culture. These behaviors, I wouldn't say you're not set in stone because they're not about the aggregate, but whatever your genetics are when you're born, you're going to be more predisposed to the type of culture in which your genetics evolved. And for me, that seems pretty simple, but a lot of people, I would argue most people, especially in America, because our science education is garbage, they just don't understand the implications of where you evolved, because it's those evolutionary pressures which pretty much weed out through natural selection which traits are selected and which aren't, and how you evolve.
Okay, so you would probably agree with me here then, when, you know, the left believes, and, you know, those that are, they call themselves left or liberals, you know, they would believe that these surface characteristics that you mentioned before, right, food, music, fashion, they believe that this is culture, and they push the narrative that this is culture because it's the easier path, right? It doesn't challenge their narrative, because if we say that, you know, it is, you know, hey, culture is genetic, these behaviors are fundamental to this particular race or group of individuals. And that all of a sudden shatters everything that they are basically putting to the forefront here.
Yeah. I definitely believe that. And I don't know if it's conspiracy level for them, whereas they know better than to shatter that illusion, because then they might lose their minority voting blocks, or if it's just something that they're really ignorant on, or if they're just so involved in the sophistry of life that they want to believe the best of people that they just think science is a lie, because a lot of them still think races in general are socially constructed and aren't even real, even though we can identify a race based on its skeleton and certainly by its DNA through its haplotypes, haplogroups, whichever way you want to call them. We can identify with precision down to ethnicity. We can tell the difference between North Korean and South Korean.
You mentioned Hurricane Katrina, and ever since I read the words, I just kept thinking about this, and I really want you to unpack this for the listeners here. It's okay, so basically, it isn't necessarily the fault of the government, but rather the reality of the hunter-gatherer culture that's been ingrained in Africans for generations. right? Because New Orleans is, there's quite a huge African population there. And it's this ingrained hunter-gatherer culture that left them unprepared for Hurricane Katrina. And it wasn't the government that was to blame for this in their reaction to said disaster.
Oh, yeah. I would say that this is observable all throughout the world, no matter where we have a disaster. And no one has to take my word for it. They can go look it up on Google and look at old YouTube videos and everything. If what I was going to write in the book, I just didn't feel like doing the research for it, was, you know, we have that in the United States, I think it's called Tornado Alley, maybe, through the Oklahomas, all the way up through Kansas. And you see these white people here, every 5 years, everything they own gets destroyed, picked up and carried away. And people are screaming at them, why do you keep rebuilding there? It's just going to get tore down again. Well, these people just rebuild it again. They don't have to bring in hundreds of FEMA trailers and martial law to shut the looting down. They just pick up and rebuild again. Just like across the way from me, about 60 miles to my west in West Virginia, they had some of the worst flooding ever. I think it was in 2008, 2009. They didn't have to call martial law. They didn't have to have the federal government fly in with their tanks and big cargo planes and drop off. These people cleaned their own mess up and rebuilt themselves, because that is just what the agrarian culture. And see, I like putting it in cultural terms instead of saying black and white, because then it just sounds like you're trying to make a white nationalist alt-right racist argument,
right?
Saying white people can rebuild but black people can't. But it's the hunter-gatherer culture, because we see it with Native Americans and Aborigine Australians and anyone who was strictly a hunter-gatherer culture in a strict sense. They just have trouble with things like these, because they just, a lot of it comes down to just what you know and what you don't know. I know that it's a controversial thing to say that memories per se are passed down through genetics, even though in our amygdala and things like a fear of heights, they have genetic linkage. It can be showed to be hardwired. So we definitely have to do deeper studies on this to pinpoint it, to prove it. But I think the empirical evidence really supports the fact that a hunter-gatherer culture is totally unprepared for a natural disaster. And that's what we see in a place like New Orleans and Katrina, when the levees break and, you know, and the Fifth Ward's flooded and the French Quarter's flooded. And these people, they have no idea what to do. I'm sure that most of these people are good people and they don't want to loot. And they don't want to have to rely on the government to help them, but they just don't know what else to do, because they've never had a period in their evolutionary history where they've actually had to build cities and fight back against disasters. Their ancestors, if the Nile flooded in Africa, their ancestors wouldn't build levees to protect their tribes. They would just move on. So they've never had a period throughout their evolution where they've been forced to stay and fight against the rising tide, which is, you know, apropos for the discussion. But it is, unfortunately, it seems to be observably objective that if black people ever face a natural disaster, and the same thing when you look at Haiti versus other places that have had massive earthquakes, Haiti versus Japan, the whole world didn't have to come together to help Japan, even though they had a nuclear disaster on top of their earthquake. The Japanese pretty much did it themselves.
Yeah.
Whereas Haiti, it took a world effort, and they're still eating mud cookies.
Haiti versus Japan, I mean, really, like, the only thing that's different is the culture. In terms of the natural disaster, it was pretty much the same.
Yeah, the natural disasters were eerily similar in the, you know, in the scope of the earthquake. And like I said, Japan had it, you know, they were double effed because they had, you know, the nuclear plant and the nuclear meltdown. But one culture was able to pull themselves up by the bootstraps, that old, you know, overused saying, and the other culture literally had to rely on the sympathy of the rest of the world. And this is something that's pretty, I mean, you can blame it on people and say that you can blame it on other people, you know, all Haiti's been oppressed, people have impoverished Haiti and they don't have the tools, or, you know, they don't have the wherewithal, they never had good educations and this and that. But that's really just, I don't know what to call it. They're taking it way past the margins of believability when they try to put something like that off, when you can't have people come together to even remotely rebuild an area. They just still exist in the squalor that, and all the rubble and that the hurricane left behind, whereas other people are just back to business as usual.
Moving on to the next question, you mentioned in one of the chapters, you say that you are quick to distinguish yourself from, and I'm quoting you here, the Jared Taylors of the world, because you say that it's not that they have a primitive violent culture because of their low IQ, but it's actually the opposite. They have low IQs because they evolved in these primitive violent cultures. And I thought that was a really interesting point that you made, because that does distinguish your opinion from, you know, what most typically on the alt-right or, you know, the white nationalists would basically claim as their argument.
It's a little bit like a take on the chicken or the egg, in a sense. People would say, do they have bad cultures because they have low IQs, or do they have low IQs because they have bad cultures? I think it's a symbiotic relationship between the people evolving and where they evolved. I mean, was there ever any catalyst for IQ growth? Now, for the white Europeans, the agrarian cultures, people argue two separate hypotheses here. One of which has more evidence in that white people bred with Neanderthals, and that's how we developed more brain mass. It's just, I happen to disagree with that, because Neanderthals were obviously not the more intelligent hominid, or else they wouldn't have went extinct. We would have if they were more intelligent. So I don't believe we developed our brain mass from that. We developed our brain mass, I believe, our extra brain mass. We have God, don't quote me on it, like maybe 300 milliliters more brain mass than Negroids and Mongoloids. Asians have more than Caucasoids, white Europeans. Yeah, we had a catalyst. We had circumstances that helped us develop a high IQ, whereas, you know, the way that a hunter-gatherer culture in Africa evolved, they never had a catalyst to need a higher IQ, because people sometimes misrepresent or misunderstand evolution, and that is trying to fine-tune this better organism, this perfect organism. No, as long as you can breed and survive and pass on, you're not necessarily going to experience any radical changes. So there was no catalyst in an African culture that would have promoted a higher IQ to spread as a phenotype among black people. They weren't low IQ. Their culture wasn't the way it was because they were low IQ. They were low IQ because the culture in which they lived never demanded them to be any smarter. And I bring up an example in the book of beavers build these beautiful, elaborate dams. If you gave them an IQ test, they would piss on it and chew it up. You know, they don't have an IQ. Mm-hmm. Eagles build beautiful nests. The turkeys in Australia build these elaborate nests, and they'll steal stuff from people's yards to put in their nests, like their decorations or something. You know, they try to build the most elaborate nest they can. So building structures and stuff that are elaborate, and even ant colonies. Ants have a brain like the size of a needle, but they build these elaborate colonies that protect the queen. And they have a whole social and genetic hierarchy structure within their population, where you have the breeding ants and then the working ants, who, if they do breed, their offspring are sterile. And they have this just this beautifully mapped out system where they have this gorgeous structure. You know, I mean, little kids all over the world own ant farms because they like looking at the way the tunnels go. And the queen's got her own little jail pod down there and everything. And it's just, you know, everybody loves looking at the ants, but they necessarily don't have to have an high IQ to do this. That's just part of their evolutionary track. And it's the same thing with Africans. They just never had to develop a high IQ. I probably babbled about this 5 minutes too long. I could have just said that there was never any need for them.
The lack of a catalyst. Okay. The lack of a catalyst in African culture, right? They didn't need to develop a higher IQ. There was no catalyst to bring upon that change, just so we're all clear.
And if I could just jump back in real quick and say, for the Jared Taylors and the Richard Spencers of the world who put it down to IQ, they're just following the information that they can easily digest. They see a guy like Charles Murray, who's worked for decades on the bell curve, and they show that the blacks are behind whites in the bell curve, who are behind Asians in the bell curve, who are behind Ashkenazi Jews in the bell curve. And they just want to make the simplest correlation they can. They ask the question, like many of us ask the question, why are black people in the aggregate behind white people? And I say white people because we white people are the ones who are blamed typically for holding black people back. And they're looking for the easiest road they can take, in my opinion. So they say it's the IQ. But no, it's not necessarily the IQ. The IQ does a lot to explaining crime, to explaining single mother households, but it doesn't do anything to explain why they never built, you know, great bridges and dams and cathedrals and things. And of course, that's just my opinion, but I feel that I construct a model that's accurate enough to really support my opinion here.
Good stuff.
And that just about wraps things up here, guys. There is more where that came from. My conversation with Brian lasted at least an hour, if not longer. So I promise you will be getting the rest of this interview. We're going to bring it into you in episode 3, where we continue talking about the genetic roots of culture, and we talk about things going on right now and how this outlook on culture affects those events. So I promise you will be getting that content. You will be getting it. It's coming back in episode 3 for you. So we hope you enjoyed this, and we really hope you enjoy the rest of the interview to come. In the meantime, guys, be sure to subscribe to the podcast. You can find us at remzorepublic.com/podcast. You can also find us on iTunes and TuneIn. I had a great time with this episode, guys. I am so excited for you guys to kind of get to just delve in some more as we get even deeper into the enigma that is culture. All right, guys, I'll see you next time. This is Tiana signing off.
Thank you for listening to Unapologetic. Tune in every Monday for your weekly dose of current affairs from an unapologetic perspective.